games. We had to record this again, and that's really lame. Yeah. This is part two of our Mockingjay part one review. Highly suspect reviews. I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
I'm still JC.
Sorry. The computer or me, it could have been user error.
Yeah. I blame the Capitol.
You blame the Capitol?
I blame the Capitol. I think they're interfering with our transmissions because they don't want people to know what we have to say about this movie.
Donald Sutherland, I'm looking at you right now like you looked at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Come on, kids. Go watch. You're going to watch science fiction movies. At least start with the classics.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
It could technically be true because this was the only press screening in Austin. And then I heard in New York and L.A., those screenings had like a giant watermark on the screen.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, they actually had to watch in the theater a watermarked digital copy. And it was like, are you fucking serious?
The words running across the screen, this is a screener, it is not for... Yeah, no shit. What was I supposed to... I'm going to go back there and grab your computer?
Yeah, I don't know how all that works. It's very Orwellian. Much like the society in which Katniss and her friends have... Katniss and her friends... There's Blondie Twerp. There's Thor or less.
That's what's it? Gale.
Gale?
Gale.
I thought it was Kale.
No, it's Gale.
See, that's good because one of the things that really bothers me about this movie, about this franchise, is the naming of characters.
Everybody's got a wacky name that no one would ever name their kids. And of course, now there's probably hundreds of kids.
Well, everybody's
Katniss and Peeta, but
everybody's either named after a menu item from a vegan restaurant, or they're named after streets in a gated community. Like, I don't understand. Like, you can turn down Everdeen and then take a ride at Primrose, and
maybe
it's just
the
like
the story ends with time travel, where they go back in time and they like have filmed everything that happened and they show it in theaters, and then that makes it where civilization evolves to the point where everyone uses these stupid names.
What are you, Christopher Nolan? I couldn't follow a damn thing you just said.
I just hope I don't meet a girl named Katniss in the future.
So we all knew this was going to be a cliffhanger. We knew that because
it's called part one.
Well, that's what finales have to do now. They have to be split into two parts because it's very essential to the cultivating of more money.
Yes, of course. Not artistically.
No.
I mean, I can really only think of one example where it was necessary, which was the last Harry Potter one, because that book was ridiculously dense and huge. And yeah, the movies, both those movies go. Other than that, can't really think of another good example where the splitting it up did anything but have long periods where nothing happened.
Well, what about the Matrix? No, you're right. No, there's
well, that
just
wasn't even based on books, so they didn't have that excuse.
Well, the plot line in this one, you know, and if you haven't seen the first two, we're going to spoil it a little bit, is that, you know, Katniss has been rescued from the games, and she's kind of been pulled into the world of the rebellion as they're fighting back against the Capitol and all of its evil machinations. So she kind of becomes the poster child for the rebellion, like to inspire people to rise up, because the only way the rebellion's going to work is if everyone rebels. That should be self-explanatory.
And the movie is filled with action scenes of making propaganda films.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, that's very Orwellian, but there is the Star Wars element of they kidnap her and bring her to the rebel base on Endor, apparently.
Yeah, it's there's some really interesting things actually happening under the surface of this film, or even really more surface than
I was going to say most of the movie takes place underground.
True.
So, you know, it is under the surface.
Mean, one of the more interesting things is that, like, you're constantly, like, Katniss doesn't completely trust the rebellion either. And the movie doesn't really give you any flat out reasons to. It's other than the fact that there's something that just feels dirty about being part of propaganda and that kind of machinations to win the hearts and minds of the people when it's so calculated. Mm-hmm. And she feels that, and the audience, I guess, is supposed to feel it on some level. I mean, I guess at some level this movie is really about, like, it doesn't matter whose side you're watching. It's all been very carefully planned to affect your emotions.
Or at least that's what it should be about, because that's an interesting concept.
True.
What it's actually about is this girl that just can't stop pining over this little blonde twerp and makes all of her decisions based on whether she's going to get to see him again, what his best interests are. And meanwhile, Peeta has become a fucking sock puppet for the Capitol and is just spouting out rhetoric on TV. And I sympathize with him. He's obviously being forced to do it. But instead of, like, you know, I need to do these things for the rebellion because people are dying and, you know, the Capitol is corrupt and they're quelching the rights of the people. Mm-hmm. No, I need to do this because I'm all, you know, Capulet and Montague about this bullshit.
Yeah. And her motivations are kind of one of the big problems I have with this, because I revisit movies every now and then, and for the first two, I've seen a couple of times each, and I do, for the most part, kind of have trouble retaining where it is that's happening, because these movies are fairly generic. But, I mean, yeah, my biggest problem is, from the get-go, I never bought into the relationship that starts out as fake, and at some point, I guess, becomes real, but I never buy into when it becomes real. And it's
that too, yeah.
I think the biggest problem of the first movie is that the emotional beats that were important for that weren't included at all.
Yeah.
They were just flat out left out. Was I thought the second movie did a lot to put band-aids on that and really worked. The second movie blows away the first one. This one, the biggest problem with this film is that there's actually a really good film here that's constantly undercut by Katniss herself, who's like, hey guys, remember this is based on a YA novel, so we gotta do lots of pining for this boy and doing stuff that's counterintuitive as hell.
To the point where she feels dependent. Like, yeah. She feels dependent on this guy, which I think completely waters down who this character's supposed to be, when it's like, oh, I don't care what happens to anybody as long as I get my boyfriend back. And there's a scene that broke me. There is a scene that would just, like, I completely gave up on the Katniss character.
She lost both of them.
She's like, did I lose them both? Did I lose them? You mean, you're literally pointing out the love triangle. Did I lose both ends of this isosceles dick triangle that I have been cultivating? It's like, should that be the big focus? Should that be what drives the character? Should that be her sole motivation?
Yeah.
Is whether or not she at least ends up with one of these two guys?
It's like the whole rest of the movie grew up. It was like, okay, now we're going to tell a serious story. This is more of an adult, arty type film, except for her.
Yeah.
It's the one part that didn't. So, like, you still got something for the teenage girls to go, like, oh, I feel your pain, Katniss. I don't feel your pain,
seriously,
Katniss.
Yeah.
You are so fucking immature. It is time to grow up and realize people are dying everywhere, not just your two little boy toys.
And I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much of this comes across in the Mockingjay book. But it's like, as a movie, it's really hard to get behind Katniss, because it feels like, you know, if her motivation is weak, then, you know, if her investment is fraudulent, then our investment is in jeopardy. Because it's like, if we feel like the only reason she's doing anything, and she literally is built up in this movie, not only in the movie, in the advertising of the movie, as the symbol of the rebellion, as the, like, help me, Katniss Everdeen, you're my only hope. And the whole time she's just like, yeah, I'll do this until I get to marry one of these two guys and settle down. And I'm like, oh my God, how is no one having, like, running rampant with this character if that's actually in the book?
And I've talked about how, like, that's one of my biggest problems with these movies based on YA books is that you there's all sorts of interesting things happening, and not just like in this movie, but another movie that came out a few years ago that for all intents and purposes was a horrible movie, The Host. But I thought there was interesting things happening, but all the movie focuses on is the girl and which one of these two dudes she should be with.
See,
Twilight does that. This does
yes.
that. I mean, thankfully Divergent doesn't really do that.
Well, The Host and Twilight, I mean, you're talking about Stephanie Meyer properties with both of those. And that's actually kind of my issue that's creeping into this. It's like, I see more potential in this.
I see a
lot better movie here, a way better performances. And I feel like it's starting to be squandered in favor of going for the thing that they know is going to sell tickets, which to me is ridiculous, because it's going to sell tickets anyway.
You can still have that love triangle without forcing it,
which
this movie does so desperately. It just crowbars it in. And even, like, the moments when she's not making really stupid decisions or whining about PETA, she's actually a good lead character.
Yes. I mean,
you see her those moments where she's seeing all these dead people and she's like, gives heroic speeches and is a badass with her bow and arrow, like, once in the movie, for the record.
Yeah, fires it one time.
You're like, okay, that's pretty cool. I mean, there's no denying Jennifer Lawrence is a really good actress. But yeah, it takes away all the goodwill that this movie is buying for you with the beautiful cinematography, which it really does have, a great cast of people. Now we've got, and why do I keep forgetting her?
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore is the president, who's wonderful in this.
She's the president of the Rebels.
Yeah. Sadly, the last movie for Philip Seymour Hoffman, so we keep our eyes on him at all time in case he suddenly dies on screen.
Yikes.
Yikes. Even like a Liam Hemsworth is starting to get a little bit better as an actor.
He's getting a little bit better at convincing us he's his brother.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that.
Little tiny bit.
Little brother.
He plays Gale, which is the other part of the triangle. And I found myself the whole movie going, bitch, Gale's right here.
Yeah.
And for one thing, he was there first. And for another thing, he's a lot better looking than PETA. Yeah. So just, you know, I'm just saying.
But Tiger Beat pulls aside.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I really just think, And again, like, I get it. I get why a young girl would have the motivation of, you know, being in love and making decisions based on that. But it's like,
when are you going to wake up to
the reality? Wake the fuck up and look around. Like, do you not think there might be a few more pressing issues? Not only that, but do you not understand that what you're doing in this movie feels like a complete divergence from what you were in the first two movies, which was somebody who was actually fighting for what was right. And the love, like, the love thing in the first one felt like such an, I mean, it felt still at the end of the movie like something they were doing to game the system.
Well, and it really was for her. That was kind of the point, was that she didn't realize until the end of the first movie that he was actually falling in love with her. She just assumed all the way through that this was all part of the act. It was a shock to her that he was actually, he got into it.
And I would buy it. I would buy all of this. Every decision she makes, her pining over him in this movie with her character, if he was somehow important to the revolution, if he had some bearing on the overthrow of the Capitol, he doesn't.
The only point
he's a fucking pawn.
The only point he serves at all is to be on screen as the one talking versus her. But even they say it themselves, he would never have had the power she did as a symbol. So fuck him.
Yeah, who gives a shit? And I'm talking narratively. I'm not talking like, why does Katniss give a shit? I'm talking narratively with this character. You are sacrificing everything, in my opinion, that makes Katniss a strong female lead in favor of this young adult bullshit that has no bearing ultimately on the revolution.
Yeah, and it is one of the problems, like, structurally with this, because the rebels even kind of acknowledge, they're like, well, he's only there because he fucks with your mind. Like, that should click in their minds. Well, if your mind's that easy to mess with, maybe you're not the girl.
And I would like to point out as well that if you can't be happy without a love triangle, Finnick is down there now. And he's pretty good looking.
Finnick, another person who I was like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, he was kind of the guy who was kind of like, seemed like a frat boy type jerk in the second movie, but then turned out to actually be a good guy.
Don't remember
this
him
movie adds Natalie Dormer, who we all love so much from Game of Thrones.
I do like her.
So I'm going to marry her. As Cressida, and we're going to live in a castle.
Who is a film director who has escaped the castle, the capital, because she wants to join the rebels and she wants to be there to help the Mockingjay.
And in this movie, she plays the girl with the ivy tattoo. The side of her head.
I wonder how many girls are going to end up shaving their head like that with half their head shaved.
If you look like Natalie Dormer, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
It won't work on any of them. It only works on her.
Yeah, I suspect that's true. But she does make an interesting addition to the film.
Yeah.
I mean, she is sort of the symbol in the film for the propaganda, the idea of, like, you have to fight propaganda with propaganda, which is really true, admittedly, but still, you know, I don't think they ever expand her past that, but she serves her purpose well and looks good doing it.
And again, like, that whole propaganda thing is far more interesting than the central, you know, set piece of the movie, which is this love triangle. And the problem is that, like, it gets really wishy-washy about the propaganda, because at first you think it's going to make that statement, like, is this right? Is this, you know, just fighting fire with fire? Are we really any better than them? But it doesn't. In fact, at moments it feels more like it's heroicizing the propaganda than it feels like it's presenting a complex moral issue.
It approaches the question several times during it. It's clear the characters are uncomfortable about it. They even address it in a minor sort of wishy-washy way. But then it's all just kind of left on the floor afterwards. And I guess I can't judge it until we've seen The Mockingjay Part 2.
Then why are we here?
But I get the feeling that, like, the second one is not going to get into that and is just going to be like so many of these before. It was mainly talking in the first half, and the second half is where all the action is.
The last shot of this movie before the inevitable cut to black, because you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Kind of sums up this whole movie. I'm not going to say what it is.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But it kind of sums up the entire movie that's the shot we end on.
Well, it ends on a sort of like, you're like, it's supposed to be like, it ain't no Empire Strikes Back. That's for sure.
No.
Ends on a moment that makes you go, really? That's what we're supposed to give a fuck about and be all tense about? Because I realize that I'm not the demographic audience that you're aiming this at.
Yeah.
But that being said, I would hope that even most girls, after watching the rest of this movie, would go, really?
Can't any of these female characters, these female leads, you know, in these young adult properties, can't they just have their own motivations? Can't they have their own goals without somehow it being tied into some dude? Like, that's I sound like I'm just spouting feminist rhetoric, but I'm not. Like,
we want her to end up with Natalie Dormer.
I don't give a shit who she ends up with. I give a shit what happens in the revolution of which she is a central, you know, she is essential. Like, no, I don't give a shit who she ends up with. I'm on Chris's side now.
you bring up a good point about, yeah, you talked about the way these, the movies that have inevitable sequels end. Yeah, like the last shot that this ends on, when you compare it to like Harry Potter, like that one had such an iconic image that it ended on, and you're just like, yes, I can wait a year for the next one. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? I would have felt better if it had ended on something that was just like, it introduced an idea that you really wanted to see more of. And that, you know, like, I remember when I saw The Matrix Reloaded, and it ends on that shot that's like, it introduces something and it's really tense. You're like, oh, what's that? And then it stops. And I remember I was in the theater and some guy behind me just went, bullshit. He was so mad that that's where it ended because he wanted to see
but
more.
But that's how you should feel.
That's how you should feel.
If you're going to do a two-parter, you should be mad. You should be like, oh, damn it.
More.
It's the way a season ends of television.
Yeah, because even with this, for the 45 seconds leading up to it, you're like, all right, now this is going to end. And, and it's over.
I mean, the way it leads up to it, you think that, like, you know, he, like, the character in question is turned into a xenomorph from Aliens or something, but, you know, it's like, wait, really? That was the whole, there's no, it just ends with a whimper. And after a pretty big and bold third act that does some pretty awesome stuff and leads to some pretty intense tension, it really wimps out at the end. Yeah. And I know a lot of that has to do with, like, well, where do we split up this book into two? That was, I thought, the weakest book of the three, personally. But I know there's a lot of changes in here. Certainly there's got to be, because presumably Philip Seymour Hoffman's not going to be in this next one.
Presumably.
You know, I mean, CG's come a long way, but...
No. No, no, let's not do that.
Strangely, he is in all the Star Wars prequels, though.
No, he's not. No, you shut your mouth.
Or sequels, sorry.
Yeah. No. No, still no. I'm still going with no.
Okay. Anyway, let's go to final thoughts and JC.
Yeah, for the first, I mean, for this being the first part of a, you know, a complete story, it still kind of broke it up into three acts, and the first act was just kind of not a lot going on. It just kind of seemed like they were stretching it out. Like you may have said earlier, a lot of it just didn't really work. Stuff in the third act, I think, saved it for me. The third act was pretty tense. It led to a lot of stuff that I do like seeing in this. But yeah, I mean, without seeing the whole thing, it's really hard to kind of gauge the whole thing, because presumably the finale is going to be from the same director and everything like that. So for now, I mean, really all I can do is give it 6 out of 10 incomplete. Get it?
No, I get it. I get it. I like it.
Brian.
You know, it was kind of inevitable the way that they broke this movie up, that it was going to feel like a waiting room, but I didn't actually expect them to set a majority of the film in an underground waiting room, which is kind of how it felt. I mean, there's so much preamble to this revolution that I kind of felt like the screenwriter was Thomas Jefferson. But
oh my God, it was Thomas Jefferson.
It was. Holy look at
shit,
that.
Look at that.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that not all franchises are created equal.
Self-Everdeen.
Nice. Not all franchises are created equal. Yeah, I don't know. There's so much dead air in this movie for one. And I really do think they are completely undermining the character. Like, I'm going to leave the books out of this entirely. The character that we were introduced to and the character that they've been cultivating through this franchise in Katniss Everdeen is a lot stronger, a lot more independent, a lot more dynamic, and a lot more interesting than the Katniss Everdeen we're introduced to in this third movie randomly. And I just think they're focusing on the wrong things. And maybe that'll change in the next movie, but if the last shot of this one is any indication, it really doesn't feel like they're going to. That coupled with the fact that I will completely admit, as Chris said, I'm not this movie's target demographic. And more I feel like that's starting to be an issue for me. Like, I really do feel like 100 years old sometimes when I watch these young adult movies, because I'm just like, I don't get what you kids are into anymore. I don't understand it. I'm all about revolution. I'm all about, you know, dystopian societies and a lone warrior kind of rising up and inciting revolution. And that stuff is fucking cool. And it's so, you know, it's so relevant. And meanwhile, you have a movie that really, if you think about it, should hit really close to home for us right now. But instead, all we can think about is, like, the fact that it is so overly commercial. I mean, the president that Julianne Moore is playing is President Coin. I really wish she'd still been in the military so she could be Major Coin, because that's what this movie is going to make this weekend, regardless of whether it's put together well or not. And while I do think, you know, the cinematography, the effects, and a lot of the performances are great, it's just, it's so wishy-washy and watered down that I can't even bring myself to enjoy it as much as even the first one. This is definitely my least favorite of the three movies, specifically because of how it ends and how they've kind of undermined Katniss Everdeen. So that in mind, I think I'll have to give this movie 5 out of 10 George Orwells.
Well, you know, I definitely like this better than you two, and I think partially because I really am into the books and the series. I mean, I love the shit out of the second movie. But I feel like this would have been a 9 rating if it wasn't for everything that they do with Katniss pining after Peeta. It doesn't make any sense in the context. It doesn't make any sense with what we know about Katniss. It feels completely artificial and shoved in here. It's just, it's irritating. It's really irritating because this is a good movie with a main character who, it's like she has a drug addiction or something.
Yeah.
Like going, no, that's not reasonable or sensible. You know, like that's not who you are as a character.
She's jonesing for some vitamin P.
I guess so. I think that makes it that much worse in the sense that I'm enjoying this so much and I'm so, I mean, even the slower parts, I'm like, it's got well-written dialogue, it's got good acting, it has a believable sets and characters and scenarios, and then just as you're getting really into it, they pull the rug out from under you with Katniss saying something really irritating and stupid. Oh man, I hate that it has to be this way.
Are you sure you liked it more than we did?
No, I mean, that's the thing though. It's like I didn't really mind the slow parts. I thought the dialogue was so well written, and I thought it was an interesting way of telling a 1984-ish type story, like a rebellion against the power, evil power story, with the idea of approaching it through propaganda and things like that. It's interesting. It's more slow moving, sure, but it was definitely really interesting to see how that was playing out. I just, oh man, it makes me mad, that part. And it could have used more Woody Harrelson. Can't everything. Jeffrey Wright was in this as well. We didn't mention that.
Apparently he's gone from being Felix Leiter to being Q,
which
is interesting.
Exactly. He's pretty much Q to Katniss here. And then Stanley Tucci reprises his role, but we only see him on television broadcasts. Donald Sutherland is at his most deliciously evil in the one or two scenes we actually get to see him in. But yeah, you're like, oh, wow, I want you to burn. I want to see you burn and the flesh melt off your skull like in Indiana Jones.
Wait, is that not already happening? Did you see the same Donald Sutherland I saw in this movie?
I wonder if, like...
Seems like it's already happening.
Did you not wonder at one point watching this movie if they went ahead and filmed all his scenes for the third film?
Just in case.
Just because they burn me once.
Donald, why don't you hang back for a bit? We're going to do some reshoots. Wait, what do you mean reshoots? This is all my scenes from the next movie.
I think one of the biggest problems is where I like Josh Hutcherson, he also doesn't have a giant amount of charisma either. So you're like, okay, I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it.
Truth.
This should have been a great movie. Nobody could see past the we've got to make money off the YA teen girl audience, and that hurts it in a big way. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 disappointed mid-40s males.
Disappointed mid-40s males.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Like me. Because I'm disappointed.
So you gave this movie 7 out of 10 yous.
I did.
You know what? If there were, like, multiples of you, I would make them fight in the Hunger Games, because that would be funny to me.
We actually did that last weekend.
Oh, wow.
I won.